This first section we've called How It All Began. It starts with a piece from David, our current chairman, followed by an interview with Brenda, our previous secretary. It concludes with a double act by Jeff and Christine, two of our recent regular readers. The music you've just heard, which I'm sure you recognise, was part of Hoedown, written by Aaron Copland. It was featured in the 1976 American Promenade Concert. So here's David to get us started.
Hello, I'm David Finnemore, the chairman, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the second half of today's recording, our anniversary programme. I thought I'd start by telling you a little about the origins of British talking newspapers in general, and ours in particular. It all started in 1968, when senior librarian Ronald Sturt went to Västerås in Sweden to study public library services for disabled people. He found that the library there had started a talking newspaper called a Rassbandet. Weekly recordings were sent on old-fashioned reel-to-reel tapes to 130 readers on a three-day loan basis. Ronald was hugely impressed. When he returned to Aberystwyth, where he was on the staff of the College of Librarianship Wales, he obtained support from the local round table. They held a donkey derby to raise funds, and on the 1st of September 1969 met to discuss their ideas and gave themselves 4 months to launch the scheme. Reel-to-reel tape recorders were difficult to load, and the tapes were large, easily damaged. But in 1963, the electronics company Philips had introduced the audio cassette, French for little box, for use in dictation machines. But by the early 70s, its sound quality had been improved, and it had become a very popular home audio format. The cassette tape was relatively cheap, reusable, and the players became widely available. The visually impaired soon learnt to use these players and could easily pause, rewind or fast-forward their tapes to the parts which interested them most. So, in January 1970, the first British talking newspaper was born. Tape cassettes dropped through the letterboxes of 18 blind people in Cardiganshire. The idea caught on, and slowly but surely talking newspapers began to spring up in other parts of the country. There are now over 500 talking newspapers in the UK, in many languages, Welsh, Gujarati, Hindi and Bengali, as well as English. They're all as different as their founders and volunteers and come in all shapes and sizes. Most produce weekly news, many include a less frequent magazine. Some are run by one person from their bedroom, some have professional staff and permanent studios. Like ourselves, many offer other media, such as CDs or memory sticks, as well as, or instead of, cassettes. As in every other sphere, the internet has also made a contribution, and our paper is online on our website well before it can be produced in physical form. Bournemouth's talking newspaper was one of the first, when it started in 1976 at a college in Boscombe, largely as a result of the efforts of Mr. Griff Harries. 40 years on, there are still a relatively high number of ex-teachers amongst our volunteers. Since that first year, all our volunteers are unpaid, and we have no full-time staff. We are a registered charity and rely entirely on charitable grants and donations. After the college, we had a studio with the Bournemouth Blind Aid Society until 2000, when we moved to Winton Library. When we were forced to leave there in 2010, we spent a year in a very small room in Charminster Library, before we found our present home and moved here in 2011. The considerable building works required were made possible by a big lottery grant and a very generous local builder. We now have a small but perfectly formed HQ with over 7 years left on the lease. So what of the future? I hope that we will continue to serve you, our listeners, for as long as you want us. You asked us for CDs, we introduced them back in 2008, and this year memory sticks have followed on. In response to your requests, we now have sport and what's on sections. We will do our best to give you what you want, if you will continue to tell us what you need. I was amazed to realise that I'm in my 7th year as chairman, but my predecessor, our president, Ralph Cooper, was chairman for much longer and had a tremendous input into the society. We're very sorry he isn't able to be with us today. I would like to end my section by thanking some more of those who've helped us to survive for 40 years. In addition to those already mentioned, we've had 3 grants from the Hall and Woodhouse Community Chest and have applied for a 4th. Grassroots and Yellow Buses have helped us financially, as have the Talbot Trust. Nick Etheridge, when he was head of First Point, went out of his way to accommodate our needs. And of course, without the Daily Echo and Dorset Life, we'd have nothing to read. But the biggest thank you must go to the small but dedicated band of unpaid volunteers who turn up regularly every fortnight to register the wallets, record the news, and duplicate and dispatch it. Without them, we just would not exist. Someone who was one of those volunteers for 11 years and was running the organisation when I joined 12 years ago is Brenda. So here she is with her memories of BTN.
I'm delighted to welcome Brenda, who was very involved with the Talking Newspaper for many years and was responsible in part for making it such a successful organisation. So welcome, Brenda.
Thank you.
When did you first become involved with the Talking Newspaper?
Well, I think it must have been 1998, because I retired in 1997 on August 31st, and that was the day Princess Diana died. I'd had a wonderful, enjoyable and fulfilling career, which totally absorbed me. So when I retired, I just seemed to be at a loss, very bereft, I felt. I know most people do look forward to retirement, but I certainly didn't. However, salvation came my way through a friend who realised how lost I felt and suggested I help him at Bournemouth Talking Newspaper. But I must admit, I hadn't heard of BTN, but I did say yes, I'd give it a try.
Now, I know that you were secretary when I took over from you in 2009, but what did you do when you first joined?
Well, I was called an editor, and my job was choosing news from the Bournemouth Echo that I thought listeners would enjoy and find interesting. I was allocated a mentor, and he'd been an editor on the Southampton Echo, and he taught me how to select a range of subjects from the newspaper. He was very good and he was enthusiastic, and I learned a lot from him.
And where were you based?
Well, at the time, we were based at the Drama Centre in Boscombe, and that belonged to Bournemouth Education Authority. But this centre was being used more and more by local schools, and our accommodation was needed, so we had to look for alternative premises. Of course, this had a knock-on effect with the volunteers. Some felt it was time to call it a day, and so we lost a lot of people all at once. Some of them had been with BTN for many years. But after a long and worrying, very worrying search, Bournemouth Centre for the Visually Impaired allowed us to use a lovely room on the second floor of their building. And because of the exit of lots of volunteers, I was catapulted to the position of secretary. But sadly, after 3 years, this BCBI was growing rapidly, and this space was needed. So once again, we had to go hunting around for a new home. Winton Library came to the rescue, and we were happily based there for several years.
Recruiting volunteers is always difficult, isn't it, Brenda, especially in a small charity such as ours. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yes. The question of volunteers was definitely a problem. Just a handful of people were doing the work of several people. So, obviously, something had to be done. And I'm very fortunate in having lots of lovely friends. And with a little pressure, shall we say, they became volunteers for BTN. I always believe that in this type of situation, we're all part of a team, each with different skills and all dependent on each other. Just everyone working in the same direction to give the listeners something to look forward to and something to enjoy. And I believe I recruited 15 altogether, and some are still with BTN today.
Indeed they are. So what changes did you experience while you were with BTN?
Well, most of the changes were with the staff, of course, computerisation, and the introduction of CDs as well as tapes. The CDs meant there was a choice for the listeners. Also, we began to record items for Bournemouth Borough Council. We recorded Bournemouth Life and several other publications.
So finally, Brenda, I'd like to ask you about fundraising, which can be quite a problem.
Well, one of my duties became fundraising. And believe me, that was a headache to start with. However, it had to be faced, and we had no other form of income. I managed to get a lottery grant, and through my contacts in education, I was able to raise enough money to buy new equipment, tapes, CDs, and general equipment. On a more informal note, I did organise some coffee mornings, which brought the volunteers together and raised some money. I'm sure, Diana, you'll have this ongoing problem, but that brings me nicely to say how pleased I was to hear that Diana had been appointed to replace me as secretary. I'm sure you all know what a lovely, kind, caring and efficient person she is, and I give her my very best wishes and thanks for allowing me to return. She knows how much I love the job, and I hope she continues to have as much pleasure and satisfaction from this voluntary work as I had. It's so worthwhile.
Thank you very much, Brenda. That was very kind. And thank you for sharing your memories with us.